Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:12 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 24th. Well, we've finally started to see some traction from central bank action to support markets. So the S&P 500 was up in an impressive manner in here today, closing out on the peak of the day and up almost 10%. The Dow Jones Industrials was up 11%, the NASDAQ up 8%. So that kind of stab on the upside is certainly supportive of the view that we are at a low of at least near-term significance. And we've got a very wide overextension relative to the 200-day moving average, considering that the low was at 2,200, the 200-day moving average is above 3,000. That's a substantial potential rebound. The first Rubicon it needs to overcome will be the 1,000-day moving average, which is at 2,600. Now, when we look at the consistency of the trend on the downside over the course of the last month, there's been a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs, and the market has not been able to sustain more than one good day on the upside since at least the beginning of the month, but more likely, I think, accurate from the peak back in February. Now, when we think about the point and figure chart, well, I think we need to, this is a time perhaps to pay particular attention to the point and figure charts for the simple reason that they tend to excise some of the noise from the system. So when we think, for example, about the chart over the last 10 years, I think that would be the most accurate to pay attention to. Well, we can see, for example, that this market has been liable to lengthy periods of consolidation. Following each of the pullbacks that we've seen, the bigger pullbacks, which are approximately 6 units of scale, the market has subsequently rallied. Back in 2018, it first started to pull back by 7, then it pulled back by considerably more than that, so that was an inconsistency, although the range was one above another, and it subsequently then did push back up and hold a sequence of higher reaction lows and break on the upside. Well, subsequently we've had a much larger pullback. So it would be very hard to argue that this is still a consistent trend. In fact, there's nothing consistent about it. We've had the failed upside break, we have the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, so we've had a very pronounced decline. Now, if we just simply zoom in on the last year, then we can see what the consistency of the downtrend has been. There is a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs, and that means it's going to have to at least sustain a move above the 54.44 area in order to break that sequence. Well, the S&P 500 is closing out the day at 24.46, so it is potentially now on the cusp of breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. Now, when we go back and think about, well, what can we expect? We have a previously consistent trend that began to lose consistency in December of 2018. That stab on the downside was an inconsistency. It broke the sequence of higher reaction lows. It was by far the largest pullback we'd seen in the context of the decade-long advance. We moved on to new high ground. There were people that were worried about valuations, worried about the fact that the Federal Reserve was engaged in quantitative tightening, and worried that the buybacks were not something that was going to be sustainable indefinitely. And all of those worries are now becoming front and center. But what we have had is central banks moving with incredible force to react to the reality of the coronavirus, and they are pulling out all the stops. So the Federal Reserve is now buying corporate bonds, but with the important caveat that they are only buying investment grade bonds. Now, half of all bonds are sitting one rung above junk. So this is going to set off a wild scramble by the corporate sector to avoid being downgraded, because the clear potential is that when we think about the difference between the Federal Reserve buying investment-grade bonds and not buying high-yield bonds, well, then 1,000 basis points difference between the two is likely to be, or at least the 1,000 basis points spread over treasuries is potentially now going to be even wider, for the simple reason that high-yield companies are not getting the same kind of assistance from the government that investment-grade companies are. And that is something that is, I think, a reflection of what's going on in the wider economy. Although the big individual employers tend to make a big splash and they have the clear ability to lobby for assistance, Boeing, for example, being a very good example of that, they employ hundreds of thousands of people. They also support a much wider support network in terms of their suppliers. But the influence of individual businesses, small to medium sized enterprises, employ approximately 3/4 of the US workforce. And that is a similar figure for the UK and much of Europe and indeed Japan. So what kind of assistance are these kinds of companies going to get? Then the answer is probably not a great deal. So when we think about what is likely now in terms of the response, well, we have got extraordinarily deep overextensions relative to the trend mean. So it is more than likely that we're going to get a process of mean reversion. And that could be potentially powerful. If we see an additional pop on the upside tomorrow, it will break the short-term sequence of lower rally highs, and it will set off a short covering rally, because the shorts will finally be pressured. Now, following a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, which is a type 2 topping characteristic, we have the failed upside break. The dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout. We come straight back down to test the lower side of the range, and then it broke downwards. Now, if it can push up and through the 2500 point level, then we may be looking at a failed downside break below the 2500 point level and the 2018 lows. That could set up an additional rally up towards the 200-day moving average. Of course, the first area of potential resistance is going to be around the 1,000-day moving average. Now, the bigger question is the market going to be able to sustain a move above the 1,000-day moving average? If it can't, well, then we're talking about a secular top. There is just no equivocation about that. Without the market being able to sustain a move above the 1,000-day moving average, it's hard to argue that we're still in a secular bull market. If it can move through the 1,000-day moving average and back up towards the 3,000 level, well, we're going to be within striking distance of all-time peaks. Now, when we think about the psychological ramifications of a move like we've just seen, there are going to be some people that look on the size of the overextension we've seen, and they're going to be looking at buying opportunities. So people are asking the question, well, what's the low going to look like? What are the bottoming characteristics we should look for? Because it's an acceleration on the downside. Well, accelerations end in one of two ways. They can end in a V-shape, so you go straight back up in a very dynamic manner. And I think that the most likely scenario is that the companies least affected by the ongoing corona scare and liquidity tightening up are those that are most likely to have the V-shaped recovery trajectory. But then there are also going to be the companies that are most affected by the coronavirus and are going to take longer to recover. And particularly those that are at risk of being downgraded, because now they have got to do everything within their power to avoid being downgraded. The Federal Reserve willing to buy their bonds and compress their borrowing costs is a prize that companies cannot simply allow themselves to forego. And that means that there are going to be disposals. But before there are disposals, they will shelve their buyback programs. They'll shelve the dividend. And then they'll start dispensing with non-core assets. So that's an important differentiator. Those companies are less likely to have a V-shaped recovery. They're much more likely to have a period of right-hand extension. That's one of the reasons why you get a ranging phase after a type 2 top formation. There will be people who want to buy the dip. They will create the initial rebound. Then there are going to be the people that have been deterred from investing by the volatility. So they're sitting on the sidelines. They've already sold. They're in cash. And they're going to need a very good reason to start getting back into the market. Then there are going to be the people that wish they had sold at the top. The people that did not want to sell at the bottom and will use any significant rally to reduce their exposure. So those competing forces and the removal of a source of demand from the market contribute to ranging. And if that range occurs above the lows we've just put in, and most particularly above the 1,000-day moving average, well, there is the potential that it will be able to push back above the 200-day moving average. But it could just as easily fail. And that, I think, is the big question for investors. And how well governments can stimulate demand is, I think, going to be one of the most important factors. Now, interest rates are at extraordinarily low levels. And that is going to create an environment for companies that are able to borrow to fund their growth. So one of the reasons why Tesla was in positive territory today is because it is a highly levered play on access to liquidity. It pulled back extraordinarily violently when liquidity tightened up, and it has subsequently rallied by almost 30% in just the last week in response to liquidity conditions starting to ease up. That has absolutely nothing to do with the success or otherwise of their business. It's being used by investors as a way to wager on the success or otherwise of liquidity operations. Banking sectors have pulled back extraordinarily violently as well, but their route to profitability has been really quite significantly impugned by the fact that the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates to zero, is massively increasing the supply of money, and that they are inhibited from lending because of the size of their balance sheets. They're exposed to defaults, and they've had to extend credit through revolvers, which has really dried up their ability to make credit available to other businesses. This is obviously a factor that is going to be a medium-term consideration, but we've had an awfully big pullback already, so it is quite likely that we're going to get a rebound in here. And there is clear potential that that rebound could unwind half of the decline, and it would still be in a downtrend. So that's, I think, one of the bigger points here, that we have such an enormously wide overextension and accelerated decline that just about everything is due a bounce. The better instruments, those that are likely to lead in any kind of recovery scenario, will keep on going when the rest of the market starts to pull back. So I think that's one of the more important points. And we have these short-term oversold conditions evident in a very considerable number of markets. So the FTSE 100 is now yielding 6.34%, while UK 10-year bonds are yielding just less than 50 basis points. So this kind of massive interest rate differential against a background where the government bond market is going to be heavily manipulated is clearly in favor of investors starting to look at equities again. I think that if we're going to make any kind of argument for why there should be a resumption of the bull market, it has to be that governments are so concerned with rescuing the economy that they are basically threatening property rights. The government in the UK, for example, saying that they're going to help pay people's mortgages. Well, if the government is going to pay my mortgage, what on earth am I doing paying it myself? And that kind of moral hazard is something that is really dangerous to begin to introduce. The fact that people were worried about the implications of modern monetary theory a year ago, and now they have embraced the printing of money, the massive increases in deficit spending, and trying to imagine new ways to spend money without any seeming plan, rhyme, or reason. Well, that is almost exactly what they were predicting with modern monetary theory. And, of course, it is having a deleterious effect on the purchasing power of currencies. And that is why gold was up nearly $75 today. It has bounced emphatically from the region of the trend mean. Now, this remains a medium-term bull market environment. It was overextended relative to the trend mean about 4 weeks ago, and it subsequently pulled back in a violent manner and has now bounced. Now, when we then think about gold, tends to do best when it is appreciating in all currencies. So it is now starting to accelerate higher against the Australian dollar. It is also accelerating higher versus the Brazilian real. Against the pound, it has broken on the upside and is extending that advance. And against the euro, it is on the cusp of breaking on the upside, having consolidated in the region of the previous peak. When we think about the Indian rupee, against the Indian rupee, the price of gold is now trending higher as well. And against the South African rand, it is also appreciating, but against the Chinese renminbi, it is within only about 500 renminbi of the all-time peak, and also bounced emphatically from the region of the trend mean. So what we're seeing here is that gold is appreciating in all currencies, and that is because every government is printing money. Every government is doing everything possible to avoid the impact of the coronavirus from having a lasting effect on the economy. And by doing that, they are themselves going to have a lasting effect on the economy because it is abusing the purchasing power of their respective currencies. Now, gold is in limited supply in the physical market because refining capacity has been shut down because of lockdowns in Switzerland, and less air traffic is reducing the ability of these companies to get gold, physical gold, to where it is required. So there is a short-term shortage in the supply of physical. Gold mines are sporadically shutting down because of lockdowns in their respective countries, although the majority of those mines are in sufficiently remote places that they're unlikely to have to shut down. But this is further bolstering the view that gold is a limited supply asset. Now, gold has been the stalwart in the precious metals sector. Silver is just beginning to recover, and it was extraordinarily oversold in the short term when it pulled back. And I really had better put this back in local currencies. When it pulled back 2 weeks ago below the $15 area, now it is unwinding that oversold condition. Platinum prices were also up in a dynamic manner in here today. $82 on a $700 commodity is a really quite impressive rebound from the psychological $600 area. So I think that's an important consideration. Platinum is considerably rarer than silver or gold, and it is trading at an incredible discount on a value basis. Platinum is dirt cheap, and I think when people eventually start to realize that, we're likely to see it starting to catch up again. The gold miners ETF has now unwound most of its overextension relative to the trend mean, and is potentially now going to be able to sustain a move back above the 200-day moving average. Simple fact of the matter is that mining operations got a shot in the arm with the decline in the oil price, halving over the course of the last 3 months. Well, that's done no good for the industrial resources, because industrial metal prices have continued to decline. And in fact, they've been accelerating lower over the course of the last 2 weeks. Copper, in particular, had been holding the $2.50 area rather admirably for a fairly long time, and then broke down in a dynamic manner last week to test the lows from back in 2015 and 16. So now we're seeing the potential for a rebound and some consolidation, having bounced from around the $2 area. But the reality is that gold prices haven't really pulled back by all that much, and are rapidly unwinding even that pullback. And gold miners have just seen their margins improve because of lower oil prices. On top of that, there's a significant number of miners have got all-in sustaining prices anywhere between $850 and $1,000, and the price of gold is at $1,670. So that's a very considerable cash margin. And when viewed from that perspective, and where earnings are going to be in the second quarter, well, it's an easy bet to think that gold miners are going to be setting the stage in terms of beating their earnings expectations. So they sold off aggressively during the contagion, but they are likely to outperform in a considerably wide manner with any kind of recovery scenario. Monetary policy does beat most other factors most of the time. So what I think investors will be looking at is the potential that we're going to see another V-shaped recovery like we did in 2018 and early 2019. And the quantity of money being printed right now is supportive of that phenomenon for some shares, but not all shares. The fact of the matter is that because there are so many that are going to be in dire straits as a result of the closing down of the economy, that they're just going to need time to sort out their balance sheets. That pretty much ensures we're going to get some ranging, and I think particularly true of the mid-cap sector in the USA. So the Russell 2000 is significantly below the lows put in 2018. It did not have a V-shaped recovery, and it is likely to unwind the short-term overbought condition. But then what? It has a lot of work to do if it is going to recover. And I think that is by far the most important point, that when we simply concentrate on the largest cap companies in the world, all they've had is a reversion back to the mean, and they're now starting to rebound. That's particularly true of the Chinese companies. So Alibaba, for example, is right in the region of its trend mean. JD.com is also reasonably steady in here. And the Chinese market generally, particularly if we look at Hong Kong, there has been money flowing into Hong Kong from mainland China, and it is really very oversold. It has got low valuations, less than 10, and a reasonable yield. So there is the potential that China can continue to weather the storm, and it will be in a reasonably good position to benefit from any monetary stimulus everywhere else. But geopolitical tensions haven't just gone away, The Indian market is now on lockdown for the next 3 weeks. The market was mildly in positive territory in here today. Personally, I'm just lowering the stop on my short position. I think that the problem in India is probably bigger than people have been willing to countenance. But one thing we know about India is that it does have the growth story. It does have the positive demographics. And every time it has pulled back over the course of the last decade has been a significant buying opportunity because it does have the demographics. And the potential for hundreds of millions of young people to reach their productive capacity is undiminished, regardless of what happens in response to the coronavirus. That, I think, is one of the more important points. Some of the higher growth emerging markets are likely to benefit and bounce better. But the question is, how much are we likely to see in terms of a bounce in the short term? Then I think it is interesting that when we think about the longer term interest rates, 10-year yields are around 84 basis points. They got as low as 50 basis points, and now they're starting to steady once more. So if we were to see yields contracting, then the kinds of scenarios being discussed by Ray Dalio et al. Will, and the pushing on the string argument would become more compelling. The USA has repeated, I think, regularly that they are not going to go into negative territory. 30-year yields are still around 1.4%. I do think that the big question for governments and the sustainability of debt is in how well the 30-year holds the 2% level. The willingness of bond investors to continue to support the efforts of governments to simply print with abandon is in large part going to be dictated by the rate of the yield. I think a sustained move above 2% would cause trouble for a significant number of governments. So in the short term, we're likely to see a bounce. We'll see what happens after that. But in the most important thing is that we've had a type 2 top formation. They're generally followed by ranges. The ranges start with a pop on the upside, and it is potentially now what we're getting. How long that range is, it could be anything from 6 months to a year, and then we'll see what happens. If we get a rebound that goes all the way back to the peak in a V shape, then that is going to be the clearest evidence to any investor that buying the dip works. The only thing to do is to buy, and you'll always be saved. And that's the kind of condition that is tantamount to bubbly activity. So we're at a very interesting juncture in markets, whereas gold is relatively cheap and remains in an uptrend. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.